السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. We're continuing now with the Battle of Qadisiyah, which took place in the Zamana of Sayyidina Umar رضي الله عنه. And we come to the third day of this battle. And this is the day of Amas. It is called the day of Amas. Each day, as I said to you, was given a name. So the third day, again, the Persians, they brought the elephants back to the battlefield. But they brought them in a new way. They wanted to make up for the disaster of the first day, when the Muslims cut off their saddles. This time around, they put a platoon around each elephant to guard the elephant, so nobody can come near the elephant to cut off the girths. So these guard units comprised of infantry, that means foot soldiers, and also cavalry, also people on horseback. So the Muslims now had to fend against not only the elephants, but those around the elephants as well. This strategy put extreme pressure on the Muslims. Sensing the gravity of the situation, Sa'ad radiallahu anhu conferred with his cavalrymen and asked them whether they knew how to kill elephants. This is the same question Musanna had asked in the beginning when he came into Iraq. And then somebody had told Musanna at that time that you have to cut the lip of the elephant. And that's how he became shaheed. He went to try and cut the lip of the elephant, and the elephant crushed him, and that's how he became shaheed. So this time, the people told Sa'ad radiallahu anhu that if you cut the trunk and you destroy the eyes of the elephant, then elephant is then useless. Sa'ad radiallahu anhu then sent a message to the brothers Ka'ka and Asim that they must kill the white elephant. There was one huge elephant, white elephant, say, kill that elephant. Similarly, he told Hammal bin Malik and Rib'i bin Amr, who were from the Banu As'ad tribe, he told them, there was one elephant had like some spots on it. So he told them to finish off that elephant. Now both these elephants were like the leaders. Other elephants followed them. So Asim and Ka'ka moved stealthily towards their target. Each of them had a spear in their hands. And they moved together also with infantry and cavalry. So they had some people on horseback, some people on foot. And Ka'ka is moving with them and he's got the spear in his hand. They told their men that surround the elephant to confuse it. It won't know now which side to go. So this worked. Soon the elephant started darting its eyes left and right, trying to focus on those around him now. But these elephants are trained now, the enemy will be in front of you, so you charge. But now this elephant got people all around it. Now it doesn't know which side to focus its attention. The two brothers made the best of this opportunity by getting close to it unnoticed and simultaneously put their spears in both its eyes. The white elephant shook its head violently in pain, so it shook its head so much that it threw off its driver. The person who was riding the elephant, it threw that person off. Its snout became limp. The trunk, it wasn't up now, the trunk was down. And Ka'ka cut the trunk with his sword. The injured animal fell to its side. And the soldiers on top of it were crushed or killed. The elephant is a huge animal, anything going to come under that animal will get crushed. On the other hand, Hammal said to Rib'i, you take your pick. Either you strike the snout and I pierce the eye, or I pierce the eye and you strike the snout. So Rib'i chose the former. Right? He chose that he will go for the snout. So when Hammal struck its eye, the spotted elephant squatted on its rear. It fell on its hind legs. But soon it stood up. And Rib'i attacked its snout and cut it off. The driver panicked and started hitting on the head of the trunk with an iron mallet. They used to use the iron mallet to control the elephant. Having accomplished their mission, the two commandos withdrew from the spot. The two elephants started screeching in pain and turned back towards their own troops. The other elephants now, they were trained to follow these two leaders. So when these two turned back, all the elephants tore back through their own army. They trampled many of their own soldiers underfoot until they crossed the river towards Madain. You know, many a times, our Hazrat Mohammed Patel Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, he used to make this dua. Oh Allah, cause their planes to crash. To make dua against the enemy. Cause their planes to crash. Cause their ships to sink. And let their bombs fall on their own heads. So if you look at this situation, the Persians brought these elephants to destroy the Muslim army. But Allah Ta'ala made these elephants turn around and wreak havoc in the Persian army. So it worked against them. The very same thing which was their most powerful tool in battle, this worked against them. The troops that were mounted on these elephants were killed in the stampede. Now that the elephants had left, battle started in earnest. The Persians had reserve troops, which they used to send to the front as soon as Yazdegerd was asked by the field commanders for reinforcements. However, those also stopped arriving from that day onwards. So now the battle became fairly even. The battle was now more even. Amr radiallahu an, Amr bin Ma'di Karib radiallahu an, he said to his people, I am going to attack this elephant in front of us and those around it. Now sometime you may think, but we finished talk about the elephants. The elephants are gone now. Now which elephant he is attacking? They're explaining to you different things that took place. They can't tell you the whole thing one time. So giving you one narration, how Ka'ka and them sorted out that elephant, how the other two brothers, they killed the other elephant, Hammal and Rib'i. And now they're mentioning another incident that took place while the elephants were still there by Amr bin Ma'di Karib. So he said to his men that, look, I'm going to attack this elephant in front of us and those who are around this elephant. Do not be separated from me more than a foot. In other words, stay close to me, otherwise you're going to lose me. If you remain close to me, you will see me with my sword in my hand. Then he launched the attack with all ferocity until the dust kicked up and enveloped him. So his people now couldn't see him. So they're saying to one another, can you see him? Then some of them said, you didn't deserve to keep up with him. In other words, the way he went, we couldn't keep up with him. If you lose him, the Muslims would have lost one of their knights. Now, the very courageous, brave Mujahid. Saying this, they attacked the enemy with all their might, pushing the enemy away from their leader. They saw that Amr radiallahu anh had been injured and knocked down, but his sword was still in his hand, and he was still putting up a fight. Moreover, his horse had been injured. When he saw his people had arrived and the enemy had been pushed away, he attacked a nearby Persian horseman. The Persian panicked and spurred his horse, which became agitated. Spur, you kick the horse on the side, but they used to have irons to kick the horse on the side. So the Muslims saw this and fell upon the Persian rider, bringing him down from the horse. The rider managed to flee to his army, but Amr took possession of the horse and mounted it as his own, because his horse was now injured, so he took this person's horse. On the third day too, the battle dragged into dusk, into the evening now. It was only stopped momentarily by the terrifying shout of Tulayha bin Khuwaylid, who had slipped around the Persian army to its rear. The sudden noise scared the Persians and took even the Muslims by surprise. All fighting stopped suddenly as people started looking around in the dark. Actually, Sa'ad radiallahu anhu had sent him in a small platoon to guard a strategic location from which the Muslims could be attacked. However, Tulayha overstepped his mission by going around to the back of the Persian army and yelling, Allahu Akbar. Three times he shouted, Allahu Akbar. So that was another thing that took place on that day. Then Tais bin Mashkuh, he was also part of the reinforcements, right, that came, with Hisham bin Utba. So he made a speech to the troops near him. He said, O Arabs, Allah Ta'ala favored you with Islam and honored you with Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and you became guided through the mercy of Allah Ta'ala. Hence, all of you call towards the same thing, meaning all of you call towards Islam, and you have a single government. All live under one ruler. Before Islam, you used to oppress each other like lions, and you used to hunt each other like wolves, meaning they used to fight amongst themselves. So now help the religion of Allah Ta'ala and Allah Ta'ala will help you. Seek victory against the Persians from Allah Ta'ala. Since your brothers in Sham were granted victory by Allah Ta'ala and they were able to capture red palaces and forts, meaning the Romans' palaces and the forts. So the Romans and the Persians, these were the two superpowers. So the Romans were defeated by the Muslims. So he's reminding them that your brothers defeated the Romans, now you defeat the Persians. Ka'ka bin Amr had said, my tribe was encouraged for war by the nobleman Khalid bin Ya'mar. May Allah Ta'ala reward my people how they shook this arrogant nation. No one, this was a poetry now that he recited, no one deserted our brigade when it set forth towards the fort at Qadisiya, where our friends were embattled. When I fight the enemy, I cut them with my sword. Indeed, I fight wars wisely and intelligently. I see the elephants as ravaged homes. I will slit their eyes with my lance near the trunk. Another soldier said, I am the son of Harb, and I am armed with a sword. I will hit them with my glittering sharp sword. When Abu Ishaq hates death, the soul is trying to get out through the throat. The poet of the above couplet was one of a group of 10 brothers. Abu Ishaq was either his name or that of one of his brothers. He is trying to say that even if one wishes to live longer, the soul will depart at its Muqaddar time, at its predestined time. Nobody is going to live longer than that. So that was the third day, the things that took place, on the third day of the battle. Now, on the night before the fourth day, this night was known as the night of Harir, right? So this took place before the dawn of Qadisiyah, right? before the dawn of the fourth day in the Battle of Qadisiyah. That night, the Persians changed their strategy, since Rustam had figured out that their army has not reached anywhere even near the level of the Muslims in the art of dueling. All the single combats, the Muslims dispatched all the Persians to Jahannam. So he realized that this single combat is not working out between us and the Muslims. We are losing. So now he planned to attack with all his army at once, because they got the numbers. In numbers, they outnumbered the Muslims. So now he's thinking, if he attacks with the whole army one time, in order to avoid the defeats previously incurred in duels, which had dashed the morale of his troops. So that night, none of the enemy came out to accept the challenges of duels by the Muslims. And the Muslims said, right, come, nobody is coming out. Rustam had organized his army into 13 rows. 13 rows in the center. On the flanks, on either side, also 13 rows, 13 rows. Kaka and other brave Muslims rushed forward to attack the enemy, even before Saad Radinanu's usual battle cry of Allahu Akbar. You know, he used to say, on my fourth takbir, then you attack, right? So even before he could reach, he could start saying the takbirs, they rushed forward. But Saad radiallahu anhu overlooked this breach of discipline, and he made dua to Allah Ta'ala to forgive them. Then he shouted his normal battle cry, and the Muslims launched an all-out attack. The Muslim army was organized in three rows. A row of archers, a row of cavalrymen, and a row of infantrymen. The battle was very intense and gory that night. Fighting ensued from the beginning of the night to dawn. No one talked much except for the rumblings in the heat of battle. Hence that night is called the night of growling, Laylatul Harir. The Muslims urged one another to remain steadfast, as they expected the battle to be particularly intense. Some of the dialogues recorded from the battle that night are, Durayd bin Ka'ab al-Nakha'i said to his men, "The Muslims are prepared for all-out war. Outdo the others tonight in ikhlas towards Allah Ta'ala and enthusiasm for jihad. Tonight, the one who outperforms others will have his predestined thawab from Allah Ta'ala. Compete with each other to attain martyrdom and be pleased with death. Martyrs live again a better life, if it is life that you want. If you want life, then become a shaheed. You'll have a better life. Otherwise, it is really the akhirat that you want." So he encouraged his people with those words. Ash'ath bin Qais said, "O Arabs, it is not befitting that the Persians should be more defiant in the face of death and more nonchalant towards this world than us." Meaning, it can't be that they are coming forward to fight, they are showing more courage in the face of death, and they are more disinclined to the dunya. How can it be like that? "They compete with each other in wives and offspring. So do not worry about getting killed in battle, as this is what shuhada and noble men desire for." Noble men, pious people, and shuhada, they want martyrdom in the battle. The Ju'fi tribe faced a brigade of Persian soldiers laden with armor and weaponry. They attacked them with their swords, but soon realized that their swords were useless against the steel armor. These Persians were wearing steel armor. Now how the swords can't cut through that steel armor. As their hopes diminished, they think, you know, how they, you know, they're in a hopeless situation. Humayda bin Nu'man al-Bariqi said to them, "What is wrong with you? Weapons are useless against them?" He's asking them, "What's wrong with you? Do you think weapons are useless against them? Stay here and watch me." He then approached a Persian soldier and dodged him to get behind his back. Then he landed his spear in the armored soldier's unprotected back. He poked him in the back. Because where the armor meets, so there is an open space there. So he poked him there. He called out to his satis. He said, "I can imagine them dying as they flee beyond you. Attack them thus and push them back to their base." So that was the Jofi tribe. The Kinda tribe found themselves pitched against the Persian commander Turk At-Tabari. Ash'ath Al-Kindi said, "Attack." 700 of his men lunged forward and eliminated the Persian brigade along with its commander Turk At-Tabari. They dispatched all of them to Jahannam. The battle was very fierce that night. Tribal commanders kept telling their tribes to remain with sabr, remain with istiqamat. Now, to explain the intensity of the battle, it is narrated by Anas bin Hulais. He says, "I was present on the night of Harir. The clanking of metal throughout the night seemed like many blacksmiths were at work together." How they hit, you know, the blacksmiths, they take their hammer and they hit the steel to straighten the steel or make it whatever shape they want to make it. So he says like that, you could just hear steel knocking against steel. Allah Ta'ala put patience in Muslim hearts. Sa'ad radiallahu anhu spent the night like never before. The Arabs and non-Arabs witnessed a battle the likes of which they had never seen before. We stopped hearing anything from or about Rustam and Sa'ad. Rustam was the leader of the Persian side. Sa'ad radiallahu anhu was the leader of the Muslim army. Sa'ad radiallahu anhu spent the night engrossed in dua to Allah Ta'ala. Until when it was past midnight. Now must remember, Sa'ad radiallahu anhu, he couldn't take part in the battle. He was lying, they had made him lie on his stomach. They put him on a raised platform, lying on his stomach, because he couldn't even walk, he couldn't move, he couldn't sit, couldn't stand, so they put him lying on his stomach. And he was observing the battle from there and giving instructions, giving orders. So now they say, we couldn't hear him also, he too wasn't saying anything, because now what he did, he just turned to Allah Ta'ala in du'as. So when it was past midnight, he heard Kaka was saying, "We killed a huge number of them. 4, 4, 5, and 1. 4, 5, 1. In other words, 451. Counted by the number of saddles and the number of beards. When they were killed, I shouted as a mujahid, 'Allah is my Rabb,' and then became on guard." Sa'ad radiallahu anhu took it as a sign of victory. He spent the whole night making dua to Allah Ta'ala and asking Allah Ta'ala to help the Muslims. It is noteworthy that Sa'ad radiallahu anhu's duas were always answered. Whenever he made dua, Allah Ta'ala answered his dua. The fourth day of the battle now, the day of Qadisiyah. The fourth day found the two armies still engrossed in battle. From the night, they're fighting. Now it's dawn, now it's the day. Ka'ka bin Amr said to the troops, if we stay put for 1 hour more, don't get tired now, don't lose heart, 1 hour more, we'll win the war. Remember, Allah Ta'ala's help will come to us according to the sabr we make. Don't be anxious. Don't start, you know, getting worried and all that. Be patient. Be patient. Have sabr. A number of Muslim commanders gathered around him and started fighting the enemy until in the morning they found themselves among the Persian troops near Rustam. They had, you know, penetrated the Persian troops so much that they already reached Rustam, and Rustam is right in the back. This emboldened other tribes also. Leaders like Qais bin Abd Yaghuth, Ash'ath bin Qais, Amr bin Ma'ad, Ibn Tih, Sahmain, all these different leaders of their tribes. So they now started exhorting their tribes, saying, let not the Persians prove themselves to be more courageous in the face of death, right? Similarly, the leaders of Rabi'a tribe said, you are the most veteran soldiers against the Persians and the most courageous Muslims. So what is stopping you from showing your courage now? Hence, Ka'ka once again set a precedent by leading from the front. Allah Ta'ala had gifted him with rare courage, wisdom, and strength of iman, all of which he channeled into the service of Islam. His arrival on the battle scene was a huge aid to the Muslims. Ka'ka had sensed that the enemy's patience is now worn out. Whole night they're fighting, now it's daytime also. So he sensed, no, these people, now if we just push a little bit more, we'll defeat them. Right? With his long experience of warfare and his insight which Allah Pak gave him, he deduced that the battle would be won by the side which endures. Everybody's strength is now finishing, right? Fighting for so long. So all you got to do is remain there with istiqamah. The side that will remain now with patience and istiqamah will win this battle. Moreover, Ka'ka was able to open a gap in the Persian defense to penetrate deep in the heart of the enemy army till they reached near Rustam and his personal guards. Presently, Allah Ta'ala's help descended in the form of a very strong wind, which blew from the west. It blew away Rustam's tent from his throne. His tent was blown away and fell in the river. While the dust kicked up by the storm prevented his troops from coming to his defense, coming to Rustam's defense. Ka'ka and his men made their way to Rustam's throne, but could not see him due to the dust. Rustam had in fact deserted his throne, and he was sheltering against the wind behind a pack mule. You know, the mules that they used to carry goods. So he was ducking there. Hilal bin Ulafa struck one of the mule's legs, and it fell upon the unsuspecting Rustam and displaced some of his vertebra. Sensing danger, he ran towards the river to save his skin, but Hilal was too quick for him. He got hold of Rustam's legs and pulled him back, eventually killing him. Hilal now climbed onto the throne. He went on top of the throne and he shouted, by the Rabb of the Ka'batullah, I have killed Rustam. Come and see. But now, because the throne was still shrouded in dust, the Muslims who were nearby gathered around the throne and raised a huge cry, shouting, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. This made the Persians lose all heart. The other Muslim commanders also advanced, and the Persians started running away. These are deserting the battlefield. When Jarinus learned of his commander-in-chief's death, Jarinus was now second in charge. When he heard now Rustam is dead, so he took position on the dam built on the river and shouted to the Persians to cross over. Many of them managed to cross the river. However, the 30,000 troops who were chained to each other to prevent a cavalry breakthrough fell over one another into the river. The Muslims attacked them with their spears and none of them was able to escape. So you see what the kuffar used to do, because they're afraid that their soldiers will lose heart and run away. So they used to chain them up. They chain them up so that the horses can't go through them and these people too can't run away. Now how are you going to run away? You chained up. Yeah. So you got to fight together in a certain formation and move together with this line, because you chained up together. Now how are people chained up together going to run? So when Jarinus called them, now they're going to run. They're tripping, they're falling, they fell. So like that, the Muslims finished them off. The battle ended with Allah Ta'ala's help and the efforts of the Muslim heroes and the wisdom of their commander Sa'ad radiallahu anhu. The battle was intense and furious, which the enemy endured for 3 days until Allah Ta'ala vanquished them on the 40. This was in contrast to the previous battles where the Muslims used to crush the enemy in a single day. One of the reasons of this endurance was that the Persians viewed this as a decisive battle. Either their kingdom would survive in the event of victory, or it would be annihilated in the event of failure. This was like do or die for them now. Another reason was the presence of one of their greatest commanders, Rustam. Rustam came himself on the field. Since he had a rich history of victories under his belt, add to this the fact that they enjoyed numerical and physical superiority over the Muslims. The Persians were 220,000 soldiers, excluding the daily reinforcements which were sent by Yazdegerd. In contrast, the Muslim army numbered only between 33 to 39,000 troops. Despite these odds, the Muslims were victorious after losing 8,500 soldiers. 8,500 people became shaheed. This is the largest number of shuhada in the history of the early conquest of Islam. Such a large number of shuhada not only shows the ferocity of the battle, but also the heroism displayed by the Muslims. May Allah Ta'ala be pleased with them all. So you see, from that time, Muslims were giving their life. It's nothing new. Nothing new. It's just that Muslims, instead of studying our history and taking lesson, we have become dunya people. We forget about the akhirat. We forget about the example our pious predecessors set. So now when we see some problem happening, people are passing away, now we get worried now. What's happening? But this was a norm in the annals of history. It was a norm. Muslims gave their life in the defense of the deen, or in the propagation of deen, they gave their lives. Sa'ad radiallahu anhu ordered the troops to chase the fleeing Persian army. He instructed Ka'ka bin Amr and Sharjil bin Sumat al-Kindi to chase those Persians who were still on the other side of the river by going left and right along the bank. He entrusted Zuhra bin Haywiyah to chase those Persians who had crossed the river with their commanders. However, what the Persians did, they opened the dam's gates. filling the channel with water so that the Muslims could no longer cross over. Except the first batch, the first 300 who crossed with Zuhra in the first batch. So Zuhra ordered the others to come across from the bridge across the river, which was a bit far from the battlefield. Then he caught up with the fleeing enemy. Janinus, who was one of the Persian commanders, was behind the bulk of his army. He was in the back, protecting the rear of his army. Zuhra caught up with him, and the two of them started exchanging blows. Within a moment, Zuhra killed Janinus, and he took hold of his possessions. They continued chasing the Persians, killing many of them. Having accomplished its mission, this brigade returned to Qadisiyah in the evening. Sa'ad radiallahu anhu sent a message with Sa'ad bin Umayha Fazari to Amirul Mu'mineen, Sayyidina Umar radiallahu anhu, informing him about the victory. Allah Ta'ala has granted us victory against the Persians and granted them the same fate as that of their predecessors among the Kuffar. This happened at the end of a long, excruciating battle. This is the message that Sa'ad radiallahu anhu sent to Umar radiallahu anhu. The Muslims were faced with preparations the magnitude of which have never been seen. However, Allah Ta'ala did not let them benefit from these and stripped them of the enemy and granted it to the Muslims. All the armor and everything now all came to the Muslims now. All war booty, the Muslims got it. Our army chased their fleeing troops in the river and on the roads. Sa'ad bin Abu Ubaid, the scholar of the Quran Sharif, and many others were martyred. Allah Ta'ala is more aware of them than us. They used to recite the Quran Sharif at night so silently that it resembled the buzzing of a bee. They were the lion hearts. Even real lions are no match for them. Those who were killed were better than those who survived, only in terms of shahadat, which was not predestined for the survivors. So this letter contained many lessons also. Umar radiallahu anhu used to ask the travelers passing by Madina Munawara about the situation in Qadisiyah. From the morning, any travelers coming ask, what's happening? Give some khabar, what's happening in Qadisiyah. And then at midday he would return home. When Sa'ad radiallahu anhu's messenger approached Madina Munawara, Umar radiallahu anhu asked him, where are you coming from? He said, I'm coming from Iraq. Umar radiallahu anhu asked him, tell me more. He said, Allah Ta'ala has defeated the enemy. Umar radiallahu anhu followed him into the city, questioning him on the way. He was anxious to know what's happening. While Sa'ad radiallahu anhu's messenger remained mounted on his camel, and he didn't recognize him. He didn't know that this is Amir al-Mu'mineen. When they entered Madina Munawara, the residents greeted Umar radiallahu anhu as Amir al-Mu'mineen. They carried him Amir al-Mu'mineen. The man was astounded, and he said, why didn't you tell me that you are the Khalifa? You are Amir al-Mu'mineen. May Allah Ta'ala have mercy on you. Umar radiallahu anhu replied, that's not a big issue. Who's the Khalifa? No, not a big issue. Look at his humility and his concern, which made him go out each day that somebody may be coming from there. I'll get some khabar. He could have told somebody else to do it, but he wanted to do it himself. The great humility that Umar radiallahu anhu had, he kept walking with Sa'ad radiallahu anhu's messenger, while the messenger was riding the camel, asking him questions about the battle. The messenger did not want to divulge the details, because he had to go and tell the Khalif first. But little did he know that the person walking besides his camel was Amir al-Mu'mineen himself. This is the exalted akhlaq in their long history, which we Muslims should be not only proud of, but we should bring into our lives also. No use only being proud of them and not bringing it into our lives. We must bring it into our lives. We should use him, use Umar radiallahu anhu, as an example to show the greatness of this deen, which produced such men as Umar radiallahu anhu, filled with justice, compassion, prudence, and humility. So that was the battle of Qadisiyah. When Umar radiallahu anhu got the news of victory, he delivered a khutbah. He started reading from Suratul Fath, Inna Fatahna Laka Fathan Mubina. And then he said, I wish that I could address all your needs. If we are unable to do that, then we should help each other so that we can live as equals. I wish I could tell you the concern I have for you in my heart, but only my actions can represent that. By Allah, I am not a king who has enslaved you. I am only a slave of Allah who has been entrusted with the responsibility. If I prevent myself from consuming public funds and I distribute them among yourselves until you have sufficient in your homes, I will be happy. However, if I take these funds to my home, then I will become miserable, blameworthy, and unfit to hold office. Sa'ad radiallahu anhu wrote another letter to Umar radiallahu anhu, asking him what must do with these, with the Arab zimmis now, the non-Muslim taxpayers who made peace treaties with the Muslim states, and they agreed that they will not pick up arms against the Muslims. So Muslims are required to defend them, provided they remain loyal. They remain loyal to the Muslim state. But in Iraq, there were those who broke their pacts with the Muslims. So what must do with them now? Because they went against their word. So Umar radiallahu anhu again delivered a khutbah. He said, whoever follows his desires and disobeys Allah Ta'ala loses his share in the akhirat and harms no one except himself. And whoever follows the guidance of Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wasallam, he remains within the bounds of Islam and he keeps on the clear path Islam, seeking Allah Ta'ala's promised thawab for those who obey him. He becomes successful and he will always have a share in the akhirat. This is why Allah Ta'ala says, وَوَجَدُوا مَا عَمِلُوا حَاضِرًا وَلَا يَظْلِمُ رَبُّكَ أَحَدًا. And they will find all that they did placed before them, and your Rabb treats no one with injustice. Indeed, the Muslim warriors at Qadisiyah and elsewhere triumphed over those they came across and those that they exiled. Some of those they made peace and remained true to their covenant. What do you suggest for those who claimed that they were forced to accept this peace and then left their dwellings, and those who never claimed such a thing, but still preferred to go immigrate to the land of the kuffar, and they broke their pact, and those who surrendered and neither claimed such things, nor went into self-exile, but remained true to their pact? In other words, there are two groups now. One that broke their pact with the Muslims, and the others who remained true to their pact with the Muslims. So those who were present were unanimous that those who remained true to their word, they did not rebel. The conquest increased the good in them, and the Muslims should continue to honor their part of the agreement with them. In other words, they would be safe under Muslim rule. Those who made the claim If they were true or remain true to their contract, they should be treated likewise. On the other hand, those whose claim was unfounded should be told that the pact with them is annulled and draw a new treaty. They must come and enter into a new treaty with the Muslims. The third group, those who went into self-exile, they must be offered a new treaty and they must pay the taxes. They must start now paying the jizya again. Otherwise, they were to be exiled forever and fought. In other words, they must then go away to non-Muslim lands. When the armies reach there, the armies will fight them also. Those claimants, this is the fourth group, those claimants who remained behind and submitted, they were to choose between paying tax and exile. The farmers were also offered the same choice. Either you go away, or you can stay here, pay tax to the Muslims, and live under the Muslim protection. Right? So we'll stop there. Continue with this, inshaAllah. Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq. Subhanallah wa bihamdihi. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.